ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
So I just thought of something. I want to read you one of my favorite purports, if I may, if you'll indulge me. And it came to me while we sat down here. Of course, Prabhupada sat down in a remote place. Well, not remote, it was in the city, but remote from where he came from. And he began creating the vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra. And then all the paraphernalia that was necessary for him to fulfill his desire, which was to spread Krishna consciousness, manifested in front of him. Otherwise, where would he get it? Because consider this, that Prabhupada had tried several times to start the Hare Krishna movement in India. For instance, the League of Devotees, and it didn't work. And he also had conceived of a way through commerce to make a lot of money, and it was a viable opportunity, and that didn't work either. And Krishna approved through Srila Prabhupada that the only true facility you need to manifest a spiritual movement or to reorganize your life in such a way as to be fully engaged in Krishna consciousness is to create the vibration. Are you buying this theory so far?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, so let me read you a verse in purport that addresses this phenomena in a very profound way. And I hope that you'll be amazed by hearing this. But it'll take me 1 second because this thought just came to me and I have to do a query. And hopefully it'll work. And in the meantime, before I read this, a few of you can just say why you came here today. What was like, there was a seed idea because, you know, somehow or other you brought yourselves here. This is kind of there's a lot going on in New York, other places you could be. But so, like, what was the thought? Like, what's in it for you to come here? To hear about the Bhagavad Gita, okay. Anyone else?
Yeah, I came to hear Harikatha from you, and that was the inspiration.
Okay. Anyone else?
Like yesterday, we were discussing this verse from Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
That when you, even if you don't have any qualifications, if you hear from self-realized soul, you will also become self-realized one day.
Okay. So obviously, I mean, you're here, so you had some thought, desire, right? Anyone else? Yes.
What did you hear from, like, yesterday, each and every time, I hear something new, so I came in that, you know, really to get some more.
Okay, so you wanted more. Good. All right. So let's see what I got here. Hopefully I'm successful in finding this. Third canto. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda. I have good news to report. I found the verse. Okay. This verse is from the third canto, 26th chapter, 32nd verse. And the name of the chapter is Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. And obviously this will be Kapiladeva speaking. So the verse goes like this. When egoism in ignorance is agitated by the sex energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, The subtle element sound is manifested, and from sound come the ethereal sky and the sense of hearing. Purport. It appears from this verse that all the objects of our sense gratification are the products of egoism and ignorance. It is understood from this verse that by agitation of the element of egoism and ignorance, the first thing produced was sound, which is the subtle form of ether. It is stated also in the Vedanta Sutra that sound is the origin of all objects of material possession, and that by sound one can also dissolve this material existence. Anavriti Shabdat means liberation by sound. The entire material manifestation began from sound, and sound can also end material entanglement, if it has a particular potency. The particular sound capable of doing this is the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna. Our entanglement in material affairs has begun from material sound. Now we must purify that sound in spiritual understanding. There is sound in the spiritual world also. If we approach that sound, then our spiritual life begins. And the other requirements for spiritual advancement will be supplied. I'm going to repeat that. There is sound in the spiritual world also. If we approach that sound, then our spiritual life begins, and the other requirements for spiritual advancement can be supplied. And so, just for the third time, I'm going to review this one sentence because it was the reason that I read this. So, when I walked into the room, there were a couple devotees and a chair, and then we started chanting, and then a bigger chair came, then a microphone came, then more devotees came, then a camera came, and there's more drummers coming and so forth. So I was thinking of the principle of Prabhupada sitting in Thompson Square Park alone and creating spiritual sound, because he's importing sound from the spiritual world. And now that sound begins to manifest everything around him. So it manifested, did Krishna actually, when I say it, the sound is non-different from Krishna. It manifested the dwelling place where the devotees would stay at 26 Second Avenue in Prabhupada's apartment. And then the seed idea for a corporation, the acronym ISKCON, ISKCON, manifested from that. And then lots of eager servitors came, and they went all over the world. They kept relaying that same sound here, there, and everywhere with the same result. So this principle has been proven. And here's the sentence again. There is sound in the spiritual world also. If we approach that sound, then our spiritual life begins, and the other requirements for spiritual advancement will be supplied. So I just wanted to ask you what it means to you when Prabhupada writes, "There is if we approach that sound." In other words, there's sound in the spiritual world. What do you think he means by when we approach that sound? And I mean, what does it make you think of when it's approaching sound? Yes, Prabhu.
So when we approach the sound, as in instead of running away from it, we embrace it or we take shelter of the sound of the Maha Mantra, and we give priority to that chanting, then everything else that's needed will manifest in our life. And I've heard you say this before in different lectures, that if you give priority to the chanting and to your spiritual life, then the rest of your life will organize itself very nicely around that.
Thank you very much. Actually, considering what you just said, it reminded me of a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita which describes what faith means. We say faith, the word is actually Shraddha, and The verse says, Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Kahe Sudridanishoy Krishne Bhakti Koili Sarva Karma Kritahoy, which means that when one has this understanding that by taking shelter of spiritual sound, that everything else will be manifest. Or as it's Sarva Karma Kritahoy, all other things will be done properly if you take care of that part of your life. And the increasing awareness and determination to work on that level is what faith means. If anybody gets uncomfortable, please feel free to sit in chairs also, because it's easier to hear when you're comfortable. And what about approaching sound? When you heard that, approaching spiritual sound, there's sound in the spiritual world also, and when you approach that sound, then all other requirements for your spiritual life will be manifested. What does it sound like to you, that statement? What does it mean to you? Yes?
I thought that it was really interesting that Prabhupada used the word approach with respect to sound, because that isn't necessarily, I think, of my relationship with sound, but that I was thinking in terms of when we approach the devotees who hold Krishna in their hearts, they're able to offer that to us. And so similarly, that's the way that I think of sound. It's contained within persons, or it's contained within literature, it's contained within the holy name. That has to be given to us. And so we need to approach, kind of like you were mentioning last night, in a sincere, humble way. And that's the way that everything will come to us.
Thank you. I want to comment on that. But first, I want to ask if there's anybody in here that knows about how to manifest a second microphone so we can hear the audience, or know how to get, there's 6 degrees of separation? Or okay, somebody can ask. Approaching a spiritual sound, you said, means to you that there are certain people who are keeping that sound within their heart. They have this impetus, they love Krishna. The sound that comes out of them will be beneficial. It'll actually be spiritual sound. Of course, we think of the verse from this same canto, from 325:25, Kapila Dev, Satam prasangam mamavirya sambido bhavanti hritkarna rasayana kata tajjoshanadashu apavargavartmani shadaratira bhaktir anukramishruti. In this verse, Kapila Dev is recommending that we associate with Satam those who are dedicated to spiritual sound. And in their association, he specifically says, you'll hear a beautiful kind of vibration, and that vibration will transfer you from this world to the spiritual world. And he said, all the steps and progress, the steps to advancement and progress in spiritual life will take place very naturally. Anukramishruti means practically, it means like automatically or stage by stage it will manifest by that, by hearing from people like that. That was very helpful. So approaching spiritual sound, you're saying, means approaching those who are speaking it, and they're speaking it because they're absorbed in it, and then you get it from them. Thanks. What else? Approaching spiritual sound. Yes. Yes, you're attracted to the sound, but what does it mean to actually approach it? Yes?
Give your attention.
Give your attention to it. That would be a means of approach. Because there might be a way in which you're in the midst of transcendental sound, and then your consciousness, your attention is elsewhere. I often like to ask this question, what's better, somebody who lives inside the ashram but wishes they were outside, or someone who lives outside but wishes they were inside? What do you think?
Outside.
Outside, living, looking in, because their attention is going there. They're interested in it. So that's a nice point, too, because it's possible to be sitting in a class or being in the midst of transcendental sound vibration and just not paying attention to it. But if you turn your attention, that means to approach it. That's good. What else? Approaching transcendental sound, yes.
The urge to hear the messages, especially then when they're inherently virtuous, and by developing the urge and hearing, then automatically your heart is cleansed.
Yes, a good point. That, it starts, that sequence starts with Shru Shru Shro Shodhanasya Vasudeva Katadruchi Sian Maha Seveya Vipra Punya Tirtana Shavanat. That when you serve the devotees, then you develop an affinity for hearing, which is a nice word, affinity. And from that hearing, then Krishna helps from within the heart to cleanse the desire for material enjoyment. You know, there's a point about being in the right place at the right time. Much of spiritual life is like that. Prabhupada once said that God helps those who help themselves means that helping oneself means putting oneself in front of transcendental sound vibration. So even if you don't feel like it, have you ever been in a situation where you didn't feel like it, but you put yourself in front of transcendental sound vibration anyway? Like, you know, you kind of dragged yourself there. In fact, there's a point at which, you know, the Bhagavad Gita might be sitting there calling to you, and you're walking by it, and you think, I don't think so. But then you think, no, let me just try, even though I don't feel like it. And then you pick it up and become absorbed, and you approach the transcendental sound, even though the strong desire might have not been there in the beginning. Microphone's coming, right? Thank you so much. Yeah, and you'll find out how this process happens. It gets thicker in this purport. Okay, so reiterating what we just heard. Thank you. There is sound in the spiritual world also. If we approach that sound, then our spiritual life begins. And the other requirements for spiritual advancement will be supplied. We have to understand very clearly that sound is the beginning of the creation of all material objects for our sense gratification. Similarly, if sound is purified, our spiritual necessities also are produced from sound. Here it is said that from sound the ether became manifested and that the air became manifested from ether. How the ethereal sky comes from sound, how the air comes from sky, and how fire comes from air will be explained later on. Sound is the cause of the sky, and sky is the cause of shrotram, the ear. The ear is the first sense for receiving knowledge. One must give oral reception to any knowledge one wants to receive, either material or spiritual. I'll repeat that. One must give oral reception to any knowledge one wants to receive, either material or spiritual. What did I just say? I'll read it one more time. One must give oral reception to any knowledge one wants to receive, either material or spiritual. So let me just ask you this question. If you wanted to receive knowledge, material or spiritual, according to this sentence, where would you begin? Two words. What does oral reception mean? What does oral mean? Who has a dictionary? Okay. All right. Okay, look it up. If you have a Merriam-Webster, that helps. I have one here if anybody needs it. Relating to the ear or sense of hearing, and what else does it say? Etymology, anything?
By word of mouth, spoken rather than written.
Spoken rather than written.
Synonym, spoken, verbal, unwritten.
Okay. Where does it come from? From French, which means?
Synonym, oral examination via.
Okay. Vos. Anything more? Vos? Yeah. Okay, so Actually, Radhika Raman Prabhu was explaining to us in his class on Sanskrit that the early Vedas were all spoken. They didn't write them down. And this is an interesting fact. They were more accurate when they were spoken and not written. Isn't that interesting? And there was a way of memorizing the Vedas using intonations and various hand gestures and repetition. In fact, there were in certain societies, there were Brahmin societies, the children would memorize an entire section of the Vedas, or two entire sections, or three entire sections. If you ever meet somebody named Trivedi, somewhere in their family tree, they had someone who memorized three whole Vedas. That's why they're called Trivedi, three Vedas. So by oral reception. And we just talked recently, I gave a seminar about reception or receptivity, the ability to actually hear and receive. It requires a certain state of mind or consciousness, and that requires a certain lifestyle. And if one's in a lifestyle that in which one's consciousness is disturbed or distracted, it's very difficult to receive. It's hard to hear at all. So oral reception is an art and a lifestyle. It means you have to organize your life around the principle of hearing, which means you might have to make some adjustments. For instance, once I went to a memorial service for one of my friends from high school. And in that memorial service, afterwards there was a reception, and I met an old high school teacher of mine. And she was asking me, because she saw me leave high school and join the Hare Krishna movement, she wondered what happened after that. So I started catching her up on, you know, like 35 years after high school. And so I was telling about her, and she thought it was quite interesting, until a friend of hers came over and handed her a glass of wine. And I noticed that it was very scientific. Every time she took another sip, she became less receptive and less able to understand. So this is an example. There's a way, there are lifestyle adjustments that one makes in order to be more receptive. And oral reception is the primary process of executing the process of bhakti yoga. Would you agree? Why would you agree? According to Shastra, who can give me some Sanskrit that would prove that the process of devotional service begins with hearing? Let's give three verses to give it full support. Start with one. Yes?
One I mentioned before, which is Shrinjata Swakata Krishna.
Let's live on that verse. That's a good one to stand on. Excellent. Okay? The verse is Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyan Taksto Hibadrani Vitu Noti Surit Suhritsata. Lord Sri Krishna, who is the Paramatma, the Super Soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Okay, that's a good verse about hearing. Microphone is here. So before you make your comments, we'll make sure you get the mic, and everyone can work together to make sure that everyone can be heard. Because we're into oral reception, right? Okay, so what's a verse also that talks about oral reception, that bhakti means oral reception, and that's the beginning of all advancement in devotional service? How about Prahlad Maharaj, we just heard the other day, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, Smaranam, Padanam, Shravanam, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Vishnu's, I'm sorry. Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. The nine principal aspects of devotional service. And in these, we see that the first one is Shravanam, hearing, right? And Shravanam leads to Kirtanam, chanting. So Prahlad Maharaj puts it in order that you start with that. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the seventh chapter of the first verse, Maya Sakta Mana Partha Yogam Yunjan Barashaya Asamshayam Samagramya Yata gyasasi tachtrinu. So this verse Prabhupada quotes more than any other verse in the Bhagavad Gita, and he says that this verse shows, tachtrinu, that you can learn everything about bhakti, about the material world, spiritual world, your relationship with Krishna, starting with hearing, because Krishna is telling Arjuna, if you just hear, then you'll understand everything. So, in the Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami says, Tanama Rupa Chaditari Sukirtananu Smrityo Kramena Rasana Manasinyoja Tishtan Vraje Tananuragi Jananugami Kalam Nayet Akilam Itupadesha Saram. He gives the Upadesha Saram, which is the essence of all advice, and that is if you organize your life around the principle of hearing, receptive hearing, and you continue from there, then he said everything will, all the stages of advancement in devotional service will manifest in your life, including your eternal residence in Vrindavan. It all starts from hearing. So it's prevalent in our philosophy about the oral reception. And what kind of things are required for oral reception, would you say? What paraphernalia is needed?
Ears?
Yes. Definitely have two ears. And where would you get those, do you think? Huh? It comes, standard equipment? Okay. Yeah, and it's kind of amazing, too. It's easy for me to take it for granted, but you know, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Sri Kadeva Goswami says, what do you really need? You don't need a pillow, you can use your hands. You don't need a bed, you can find a flat of land. You know, just find something to wear. Don't worry about it so much. The main thing is you're already equipped. You came with everything that you need to do what you have to do in this life. The ears are already there, and the intelligence is sufficient that if you hear submissively, and you give oral reception. It means you're open to receive. Reception means receive, which comes from Latin, which means to be able to take. You have to be able to take it. And if you can do that, then naturally all other paraphernalia gets manifested in your life, and all other stages of advancement happen step by step. But that's the part where I give myself for the oral reception. I'm open to it. I'm listening. Now, Prabhupada said that when he first listened to his spiritual master, he didn't understand everything he was saying. He said, but he kept listening, and then everything became clear. And you'll note that his guru, see, Prabhupada was, he could only come to a few programs because he was a grihastha, and he was very busy with doing his enterprise and also with his family. So he came once to a yatra that his guru was putting on, and there was an opportunity one night for devotees to either stay and listen to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta speak or to go to see Sheshashayi Vishnu as their last night there, and the temple would be not open the next day. So almost all the pilgrims went to see Sheshashayi Vishnu, and some, a few, stayed to listen to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta noted the ones who stayed. Especially, he said, when he gave initiation, he got a recommendation from someone to initiate Abhay. And he said, yes, I marked him. He likes to hear. He does not go away. And that's his qualification. So this is the main qualification in spiritual life. Even if you don't like to hear, at least you don't go away. And if you don't understand it, you stay there and listen. That's what makes you advanced, is you stay and listen. And if you hear in the association of devotees, then naturally all other things that are necessary for your advancement will manifest in your life automatically. That's how powerful hearing is. Oral reception. Continue? Yeah, you got to hear the rest of this. It's fantastic. Okay. If I can find where it was. There is, here it is said, okay, one must give oral reception to any knowledge one wants to receive, either material or spiritual. Therefore, shrotram is very important. The Vedic knowledge is called shruti. What's the Vedic knowledge called?
Shruti.
Why is it called shruti? Because it's knowledge you hear. And Knowledge has to be received by hearing. Okay, the Vedic knowledge is called Shruti. Knowledge has to be received by hearing. By hearing only, we can have access to either material or spiritual enjoyment. In the material world, we manufacture many things for our material comfort simply by hearing. They are already there, but just by hearing, one can transform them. See, this is a profound concept, and I'm going to say it again. It's like the things are already there, but you transform them by hearing about them. I'm going to read it again. In the material world, we manufacture many things for our material comfort simply by hearing. They are already there, but just by hearing, one can transform them. If we want to build a very high skyscraper, this does not mean that we have to create it. The materials for the skyscraper, wood, metal, earth, etc., are already there, but we make our intimate relationship with those already created material elements by hearing how to utilize them. Modern economic advancement for creation is also a product of hearing. And similarly, one can create a favorable field of spiritual activities by hearing from the right source. What can you create by hearing from the right source? Favorable field for spiritual understanding. That's a nice phrase, isn't it? Favorable field for spiritual understanding. And how do you create it? Hearing from the right source. Yes. Arjuna was a gross materialist in the bodily conception of life and was suffering from the bodily concept very acutely. But simply by hearing, Arjuna became a spiritualized, Krishna-conscious person. Hearing is very important, and that hearing is produced from the sky. By hearing only, we can make proper use of that which already exists. Oh my God, that's so profound, isn't it? Please say yes.
Yes.
Thanks. By hearing only, can we make proper use of that which already exists. The principle of hearing to properly utilize preconceived materials is applicable to spiritual paraphernalia as well. We must hear from the proper spiritual source. So there it is. A few comments. Just reflect what you just heard. Any part that grabbed you. Yes. Srinvatam Swakadana. It's on. He'll fix it.
So the whole purport was centered around hearing and the results from hearing, but some of the big ideas I picked up were that all enjoyment comes from hearing, material or spiritual, and also all knowledge comes from hearing.
Yeah, who would give an example, let's say from the material side? How would you say that the paraphernalia for your material enjoyment is already there, but you manifest it in your life by hearing? How would that work in a very practical sense, not philosophical? Yes. That's good. That's very, very practical. Everyone can relate to that. You hear about how to make something and somebody teaches you the recipe and by oral reception you learn and then it manifests. Yes. Or, you know, someone goes to get an education in some material science and, you know, you just sit there and listen, basically. They ask you to fill out a few papers to make sure you were listening, so they can, you know, evaluate your performance in the class. But basically, you're just listening to some expert, someone who's already done it, and they just, all they're doing is making sound vibration, and it's going in your ear, and then you see the world in a different way, and all the things that are already there then become available for you to utilize. Let's just say if a dog goes into a library, what will he think about the library? Did he bring his library card? Will he be able to appreciate that there's different sections in the library? I mean, he may have no concept at all. So on the development of the consciousness makes us aware of the facilities that are available everywhere in the world. So human beings come with the potential to expand their capacity for understanding everything in the world, either material or spiritual, not everything in the world, but as Krishna says, jnanam teham savijnanam idam bhakshami sheshadha yajgyatva nehabuno, that everything material or spiritual becomes known to one who gives oral reception. And once it's known, then and it becomes available and you can utilize it. Otherwise you can't touch it. Even if it's there, you can't touch it because you can't see it, you can't conceive it. What other things did you hear from the purport that you can that grabbed you? Any concept that you're taking out in your pocket that you want to report back? Yes, Prabhu.
So I love the point that you made, quoted Srila Prabhupada, helping oneself means putting oneself in front of transcendental sound vibration.
Yeah.
And we might sometimes not feel like being there, but if we push ourselves anyway, it will manifest.
Yes. It's very practical. If you can use your intelligence, even if you don't have taste, if you use your intelligence to understand that if I put myself in front of the transcendental sound vibration, then everything that I'm actually looking for will manifest in my life. And it'll become available. And it's the panacea. It's the only way to actually solve the problems or deal with the complexities of life is to hear transcendental sound. If you try to deal with it independently without hearing properly, then it may just become more complex. What other things did you hear? Or feeling are you taking away or practical step from this purport? Yes. That's right. Yeah, definitely. We adjust our lifestyle specifically so we can be better at receiving the transcendental sound vibration, because that is the sum and substance of spiritual life. So anything that keeps us fit for that, spiritual fitness, requires lifestyle changes in very practical ways so that you can be ready to hear. Because the more you hear, the more you'll advance. And especially the more you hear with full receptivity. Because you can hear and then not be able to grasp it as much because of delimiting lifestyle choices, which may agitate you or make you less receptive to the hearing process. Yeah. It's an arrangement. So I had quoted the verse, Tannama Rupa Charitaru Sukirtananu. This is what Rupa Goswami is, the essence of all advice. One should organize one's life around this principle of hearing and chanting. So if you're making choices, and this is your primary consideration, that how will this affect my ability to hear? Then you're going to make good lifestyle choices. Like, you know, somebody, will I be farther away from hearing or closer away? I make more money there, but actually I'll hear more if I'm closer. or whatever way that you're organizing around that principle, whatever decisions you make, if you make it based on this, then that will be helpful for your advancement. Any other reflection? Let's just take two more reflections, then I'll move on to another section. Someone who hasn't reflected yet. Okay. All right, someone who already has. 1, 2.
When you were saying, even if you're not in the mood and the book's calling to you, it reminds me of a phrase, fake it till you make it.
Yes.
So even if you don't feel like doing it, just fake it, and eventually the person's going to be like, hey, this person's paying attention. Let me get in there.
So, yeah. That's what the verse Srinvatam Swakata Krishna means. That if Krishna notices that you're paying attention, then he extends himself even more. And oftentimes, when my mind tells me that you're not going to like this, it's not very nice. Once I start, 2 seconds later, I go, what are you talking about? This is actually much nicer than what you had in mind. What you had in mind was a boring waste of time. And this is actually, I feel spiritual integrity now because I made the right choice. And now I'm actually tasting something that's improving me. So it's nice. Yes. Here comes the mic. Can you hold that really close and say it again? Yeah. What for spiritual? What's favorable? Hearing is favorable for spiritual understanding. That is a fact. Yeah. Hearing from the right source is extremely favorable for spiritual understanding. So this can be done. It can be done. And actually hearing about hearing is important, because when you hear about hearing, then you'll decide, okay, if I have a choice, that's what I'll do. If I have a way of organizing my life, then I'll make choices based on that when you hear about it. And then the more you do that, it even if you start in a small way, let's just say you're really busy. Not many people are very busy these days, but just in case you were. And you're trying to find an opening. The hearing becomes like a wedge. On a wedge, there's a small end, and then it gets bigger and bigger. So even if you start with a little bit of hearing, it's like putting the sharp end of the wedge in first. It's very tiny. But spiritual sound, when purified, Prabhupada mentioned purifying the sound vibration, expands. And the more you apply, if you just apply a little bit of pressure and incrementally increase it, it opens up a space in your life. And that's kind of an empowered activity, because actually, and no one can do anything without some kind of empowerment, either by the material energy or by Krishna himself. And if we give a little impetus on our side for the hearing process, then gradually we become more and more empowered to hear more. And there's a bigger space in our life to do it. It can start with us making these tiny little choices. Then instead of walking past the Bhagavad Gita, I pick it up. And I read a little bit, start the small end of the wedge and let it open up a space for you so you can hear more. Okay, so I heard Rasanath Prabhu say that he came here to hear Bhagavad Gita. Is that true? So in an attempt to please Rasanath Prabhu, I'm going to open the Bhagavad Gita. And read something. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Can anybody guess which verse I'm going to choose? You have a 1 out of 700 chance. But actually, it might be more informed than that, since we were just talking about a few verses. You're right. It's the first verse of the 7th chapter. This seventh chapter is called Knowledge of the Absolute, and the first verse starts with Krishna speaking. He says, "Now hear, O son of Pratha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt." So just to make us all aware of a couple of the words in the verse, in the Sanskrit, that are important. So he, Krishna, uses this phrase, asakta mana. Everyone say asakta. So asakta means attached. And mana means mind. So this is one of the goals of yoga that he's talking about here. The mind attached to me. So when the mind becomes attached to Krishna, then one's coming closer and closer to the more it becomes attached to Krishna, the more one's coming closer to the goal of yoga. And what else might the mind be attached to? Have you ever noticed that the mind gets attached to certain things? Mana, asakta manaha. What does the mind become attached to besides Krishna? Of course, everything's Krishna, but he has different energies. What is it, I'm not talking about yourselves, but what kinds of things do people get their minds attached to? What?
Maya.
Maya, okay. There's a lot of specific possibilities within that category. Huh?
Facebook?
Yes, this is the primary, this is the primary attachment of the mind in the current age, Facebook. So one might become attached to Facebook and any other things? There were other suggestions?
Money?
Yeah, you might think about money. Mostly we worry about money because no matter how much you have, you need more. As soon as you get a million, then you need two, and then it doesn't end. There's no satiation point. So the mind can be worried about that. And Krishna says earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, that the symptom of a person who's self-realized is that such a person, prajahati, is able to give up yudhakaman sarvan parta manogatan, the kind of attachments. Well, first of all, that the mind is manufacturing. It gets attached to many different kinds of objects and ideas, because the mind's constantly manufacturing these things because of its previous association, as if they're coming off in a conveyor belt. So prajahati means the person is now aware of that, the movement of the mind, and doesn't grab onto all the manufactured ideas that are coming out of the mind. And then it says, atmanyevatmana tushta. The mind, the person is able to look inwardly and find satisfaction in the self. Stita prajnasta docite. Such a person is called a person who is steady in mind. And so there are actual symptoms of this. And one need really to measure this, look to where one's mind's being attached. How important is this? Well, it's vital. In the next chapter of the Gita, chapter 8, which is called Attaining the Supreme, Krishna makes definitive statements about the ways in which we are creating our next body because of the state of our mind. So one of the verses says, "Yang yang vapi smaran bhavam tajat yante kalevaram tam tam evaite kontaya sadatad bhava bhavita." And this means that when you're leaving the body, there's a way that your mind will be attached in a certain to a certain thing. And Prabhupada puts it like this: whatever subject matter attracts the attention of the dying man, he said, that will determine the next life. And I was just with a devotee who passed away. Actually, he had been practicing a little bit, but then when he got ill, he had cancer and he was dying, then he practiced a lot. And he was doing everything he could at the end, but when I talked to him about it, he said to me, "You know, it's very difficult. All my life up till now, I've been mostly focusing on getting more money." He said, "It's really hard to give up right now." And because you develop a certain kind of attachment And it's not like you can just immediately give it up unless you've practiced. That's something that Krishna mentions also in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita when he says that one has to have yoga balena, or the strength of yoga, that at the time of death, Puruvorma Dye Pranamavesha Samyak Satam Param Purusham Paiti Divyam. He mentions that the yogis, they practice all their life controlling their minds. At the time of death, they can fix it between their eyebrows and force themselves to go to a higher position. And so the mind's condition is vital. And so how one's mind is hatched, this is what Krishna's talking about here. So he says, asakta mana, and then he says, you should be asamshayam, which means without doubt. You should understand the principle behind this without any doubt. It should be very clear to you that this is the way to go. And then at the end he says, gyasyasi, touch shrinu. You can know everything by hearing. So here's the translation. The Supreme Personality of God had said, now hear, O Sunapritta, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Purport. In this 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also, 4 kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna and 4 kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna consciousness are described in this chapter. In the first 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. That was a very concise, almost poetical, very helpful sentence, wasn't it? Do you agree? Please say yes. Okay. He says, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. So that's almost something you could use when you distribute Bhagavad Gita. When you take out a Bhagavad Gita and show it to people, you could say, you know, this book points out that we're non-material spiritual souls capable of elevating ourselves to self-realization by different types of yogas. That's what this book talks about. At the end of the 6th chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahma Jyotir, or localized Paramatma realization, is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth, because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubts. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahma Jyotir and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna consciousness yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the 6th chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in 9 different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. How's everybody doing? You're able to hear? Yeah? Okay. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, touch Srinu. What does he say? Or hear from me. No one can be a greater authority than Krishna, and therefore by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna conscious person. One has, therefore, to learn from Krishna directly or from a pure devotee of Krishna and not from a non-devotee upstart puffed up with academic education. Give us the definition of an upstart. We want to hear who not to hear from. Dictionary? We need a dictionary while we're ready to go. I think Christine's on it. Okay, don't hear from upstarts. Now we're going to hear what an upstart is. Go ahead. Give her the mic.
A person who has risen suddenly to wealth or high position, usually one who behaves arrogantly.
Any other definitions? Yes.
It says, one that claims more personal importance than is warranted.
There you go. Now, what's the opposite of an upstart? Somebody give me the antonym to upstart. So an upstart is, I mean, not the technical, well, you can give a technical antonym from there, but if the sense of an upstart is somebody who's not qualified. They haven't qualified themselves to speak. And then they just start saying stuff. There's an old saying, he had nothing to say, and then he said it. So there's a way in which, you know, there's all kinds of upstarts all over the world. People talk nonsense about things that they have no idea or no access to. So what would you say if you were going to describe what the opposite of an upstart is? Yes, Prabhu. He needs the mic. An underdog?
Yeah, like someone who's how do I put it? Yeah, I can think of another word.
Okay, maybe you can unpack it a little bit, what you mean.
Someone who deserves more, but actually like a undiscovered, like a wild card.
Okay. Actually, they're very qualified, but they don't advertise themselves, maybe. Right? Because an upstart, the sense is that they're like, here I am, and you know, I'm going to teach you something even though they're not qualified. Whereas you're presenting the possibility that somebody who's very deep, just like deep water, it's very still. They're not, you know, putting themselves forward. They're humble because they realize how profound the subject matter is and so forth. And also there's a sense, just like when you talk about an Ivy League school, why do you think an Ivy, what's that terminology? Why is an Ivy League school supposedly, you know, better? Or more prestigious, I should say. What's the imagery of the Ivy? Yes? Yeah?
It pulls oneself up.
The imagery, I'm thinking it's been there for a while. You know, it's been sitting there long enough for ivy to grow up over it. It hasn't, you know, wasn't thrown up like last night. You know, somebody put up a trailer and put a sign that says, you know, Brooklyn College or whatever. You know, this is, you know, it's actually established, well established. It's been there before you were born. You know, that's why ivy grows on there. And that's the sense of somebody who's, you know, steeped in the tradition. They have roots. And they have maturity and realization, and they're able to speak. So Krishna talks about such people in the Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere as being heavy with knowledge. They've been around. They're not upstarts. There's a term, utsahan mayi, that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur uses in the Madhurya Kadambini when he talks about neophytes, when they just begin process. This could apply to any discipline, not even devotional service. But you know somebody, they took one piano lesson, and then suddenly they think they're a concert pianist and they start criticizing everybody else, and you know, because they took one lesson. So sometimes people come to devotional service and in the very beginning they may consider themselves better than everybody else due to their immature enthusiasm. So don't hear from upstarts. The idea is that you should hear from people who are more advanced than you and who are well established in the tradition. One has, therefore, to learn from Krishna directly or from a pure devotee of Krishna and not from a non-devotee upstart puffed up with academic education. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this process of understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is described in the second chapter of the first canto as follows. Shrinvatam swa kata krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyantakstohi badrani vidhunoti suritsatam. Now these verses are what Prabhupada wrote about in his diary on the way to America. As the way he approached it, his strategic plan for spreading Christian consciousness all over the world was to expand the pure vibration of the Bhagavatam. And then he quoted these sequence of verses, which tell that by hearing, one naturally advances in devotional service. So, nashta prayeshu padreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki tada rajas tamo bhava kama loba dayasche cheta iter anavidham stitam sattve prasidati evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogataha bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate vidite hridaye grantish chichante sarvasamshaya shiyante chasya karmani drishta eva manishvare. Translations. To hear about Krishna from Vedic literatures or to hear from him directly through the Bhagavad Gita is itself righteous activity. And one who hears about Krishna, and for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling in everyone's heart, acts as a best wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing of him. In this way, a devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. As he hears more about Krishna from the Bhagavatam and from the devotees, he becomes fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. By development of devotional service, one becomes freed from the modes of passion and ignorance, and thus material lusts and avarice are diminished. When these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness, becomes enlivened by devotional service, and understands the science of God perfectly. Thus, bhakti yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of a samshayam samagram, understanding of the supreme absolute truth personality of Godhead. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his pure devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna. So, as I mentioned last night at our discussion we had at the Bhakti Center, when we're in hearing and chanting sessions like this together, one of the most important byproducts that can come out of it is good, relevant questions. Well, relevant questions are good. Relevant questions. So, as we're reading, discussing amongst ourselves, if you have a relevant question that pops up in your mind, that's a good sign. Because in any good hearing and chanting session, the product should be more relevant questions that come up in your mind, because that means you're able to go deeper within the philosophy. If you haven't heard sufficiently, you won't have good questions. You won't have relevant questions. You may have questions, but they may not be relevant to your to the subject or to the to your advancement in devotional service. So I'm mentioning this because if questions come up in your mind now that you want to ask in order to open up the subject in a deeper way, or something that you want to understand more, then please ask a question at any time. And I give $100 for non-relevant questions. But let me check and see if I have any money. Okay. So I won't say, do you have any questions? Because that's a very, almost oppressive question to ask. But I'm just saying, if you do have them at any time, then please make yourself known, because they're welcome. And if they're unwelcome, you get $100. So that's not bad. Okay. So, because questions are harder than reflections, let's just take two reflections from this purport. Anything you took away? Just churn it up a little bit. What did you hear? That's all a reflection is. Yes.
Thank you.
Well, you have to then ask, no, we want to hear from pure devotees. But then you might ask, what is a pure devotee? Mightn't you? In order to get the full answer to your question, you might then say, what's a pure devotee? Well, let's ask you, what do you mean by pure devotee? What is the definition of a pure devotee? Okay, can you give any Sanskrit? Anyone? Okay, go ahead. Let's hand the microphone over to Yugal Kishore and he'll give us some Sanskrit. Because that helps. When we're in these spiritual discussions, any time that you can back up what you're saying with a Shastric reference, even if you can quote it in Sanskrit, in English, that's good, or just say what it, paraphrase it, that's also good. But being able to trace it back. See, this is like a law court. If you walk into a law court and you make a claim before the judge, say, I think this man is guilty. And then the lawyer says, why? And then the judge says, why? And then the lawyer says, well, I don't know, I just feel that way. Or I have no idea. He's not going to win the judge over. He has to state where there's precedent, and he has to give specific cases. And there are law books. And in the law books, you know, you can say, there's this case from 1964, and it set a precedent, and it was ruled on by the Supreme Court, and that's why I think this legal theory I have is valid. And then it will be accepted, and it's admissible. Otherwise, it's just... It's flimsy, it doesn't hold. So Yugal Kishore will give us a verse that gives the definition of a pure devotee. Okay, say more please about it. Okay, so where's the verse from? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So this verse is given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is the book upon which Srila Prabhupada gave a commentary. What is the name of the commentary or the summary that he gave on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? It is called Nectar Devotion. Okay, so this is the definition given by Rupa Goswami for pure devotional service, and you'll find it at the very beginning of the Nectar Devotion and the Bhakti Rasamrita. It says, Anya Vilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Nyanavritam. So, Anya Vilashita means that myriad material desires, Shunyam, the person is free from that, and also from Jnana Karma, that means the person's not trying to understand God through the intellect or through fruit of activities and is only interested or focused on the execution of pure devotional service as the means to understand and connect with Krishna and is cultivating it. So anushilanam, the verb is shil, which means to cultivate, and that means to follow the process as given by the previous acharyas, and such a person is considered to be in a state of pure devotional service. So yes, we want to hear from pure devotees, because if we don't, then what happens is we pick up the kinds of intentions and desires that the person who's speaking to us has. For instance, let me ask you a question. What if there's a Bhagavatam recital somewhere and someone's speaking on Bhagavatam, but they don't really believe in Krishna? They actually think Krishna doesn't exist, that Krishna is only a temporary manifestation of the impersonal Brahman. And let's just say after the recital, they go off to their car and they smoke a Salem cigarette, if those still exist. They have a cigarette and a glass of beer after they recite the Bhagavatam. That's their lifestyle. Do you think there would be any difference between hearing the Bhagavatam from such a person or from hearing someone who has reformed their lifestyle around the instructions of the scriptures and the pure devotees? What is your opinion? And who can prove that by quoting some Sanskrit or pointing to it, where it actually says that, that states that, that explicit principle? Well, there's one verse I'm thinking. Are you thinking the same one?
No, non-devotee, listening from non-devotee is like drinking the
mic. Mike, milk. You can use the mic. That's the verse. Yes. Yeah, so this verse is says, it gives an analogy, which I think we'll be able to appreciate. Let's just say this is a glass of milk right here. And I go out of the room, and while I'm out of the room, a snake crawls up on this lectern and starts drinking from the glass of milk. And then slithers away. And then I come back in, and I pick up the glass of milk and I drink it. So this is the analogy that Sanatana Goswami gives. Avaishnava mukhaṁ gīrṇam bhūtaṁ harikathāmṛtaṁ śravaṇam naiva kartavyam sarpotiṣṭha yathāpaya, means that if you hear from people who have material contamination or a bad intention when they're speaking the Bhagavatam, although it's a good thing, just like milk's a good thing, if it's touched by the lips of a serpent, then it becomes poisonous and detrimental to hear. So it's a different experience altogether. So it's important to hear in the association of pure devotees. But can a neophyte, a person who's a beginner, who has some faults, also be a pure devotee? Let's just say somebody's a beginner, but they have full faith in the process of hearing. Even though they may not be perfectly following everything, they're a little bit unsteady, they have some worldliness to them, could they be considered to be pure devotees? What is your opinion? Yes? Can you prove it? We can prove it. Okay, he's given the verse. This is proof from the Bhagavad Gita. Is there a book Bhagavad Gita I can have? Oh my God, we used up all our time already? Well, that blew right past us, didn't it? All right, just to answer the last question. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadureva samantavya samyag vyavasitoista. That even if a person shows some worldliness, if they're properly situated in devotional service, they're to be considered pure devotees because their intention is right. Thank you very much for joining this extended session of hearing and chanting. That we'll try to extend them longer next time because I think we need about 5 or 6 hours to really get into it, right?
Yes.
But at least we started. And I'm so impressed that you all came out for this. So we're going to take a short break. There's going to be a Tulsi Puja, a Guru Puja, Tulsi Puja, and then in half an hour we're going to start up again. No?
6:30.
See, I don't know what's going on around here. Okay, so at 6:30 we start up again with the hearing and chanting from Shastra, and we'll be all together again. So right now there's a couple of things. Guru Puja to start with. NRT. Gaur Premanande Vancha Kalpadurvishcha Kripasanave Vachapatitanam Pavanibyo Vaishnavibyo Namo Namaha Nantakodi Vaishnavi Nikita.
Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Hey! Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman.